My name is Minas Constantinides, and I am Director of Facial Plastic and Reconstructive Surgery for the Department of Otolaryngology, which is the Ear, Nose, and Throat Department at New York University School of Medicine, and been here for the last 12 years in that capacity. About 8 years ago or so, I became interested in lipoatrophy patients only because there didn't seem to be much that could be offered them, and I tried to make myself an expert as to what the various options for them were, and at that time, the options were really minimal. We tried all kinds of things, and all kinds of things failed. One thing that we tried early on was sort of standard fat transfer techniques, where we take fat from one part of the body and transfer it to the other. And of course, the problem with lipoatrophy is that there is a loss of fat, or redistribution of fat really throughout the body, but really loss of subcutaneous fat throughout the body as well. So even patients with a little round belly, because there's some fat redistribution, don't have much fat there to use. And the only real fat that we could use reliably in severe cases was buffalo hump fat, you know, the fat from the back that developed as a hump in patients with lipoatrophy. So we tried fat transfer from all kinds of sources, including other parts of the patients and from buffalo humps, and rapidly learned that fat suffered the same fate as facial fat, in the sense that it would atrophy just like facial fat would, and there was no good long-term improvement whatsoever. Initially, patients looked great, but about 6 to 8 months later, they were back to where they started, so that was unsatisfactory.
Was this before the cause was connected to...
I don't know.
...the drugs? Okay.
I don't have any real knowledge of that, of what the dynamic is, shall I would say. So, we tried other things. We tried implanting Gore-Tex sheets. Those are sort of microporous medical rubber, really, sheets made out of Gore-Tex, the same stuff that's in your ski jacket that makes it waterproof. Well, medical-grade Gore-Tex can be stacked and implanted, and we tried that. And the stuff would shift around a little bit, and it was just not satisfactory either. We tried directly excising parts of the nasolabial folds, those folds between the nose and the side of the mouth that would get redundant and fall forward. And, you know, that made the fold go away, but it didn't really fix the lipoatrophy problem. And we even tried different facelifting techniques to try to lift what was there to try to give a tighter look to the face, and that was unsatisfactory because what really was needed was volume. So,
were you struck by how severe the cases were and the kind of psychological impact that was having on people?
Yeah, so, I mean, the severity of cases ranged from relatively mild cases where a patient might just look a little bit gaunt or a little bit more defined in terms of cheekbone area, and most people who would see that patient on the street wouldn't think twice about their appearance. And yet that same mildly affected patient would have, you know, bring in a picture of them before lipoatrophy, and they would have, you know, full round faces, and it would still be a dramatic change for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and that was extremely debilitating to them in terms of their, you know, able to deal in their day-to-day world with society, and both within, you know, their friends and also in their professional lives. You know, they felt, and the echo that resounded throughout, you know, every patient's tale was, you know, I feel like I have, you know, a mask on my face that has labeled me as a patient with AIDS.
Yes.
And that's very, especially when treatment advanced and viral counts are zero and T4T levels are back to normal nearly, you know, to still have that label when in every other aspect you're essentially disease free, that's a very psychologically difficult thing for most patients to handle.
Yeah.
we've had along with the saga goes the efforts to try to get insurance companies to pay for some treatment for lipoatrophy, and that that has pretty much across the board failed, except for some very you know, sort of rare policies that might allow for some treatment based on psychological impact of the disease. But it's striking that insurance coverage is relatively rare for this this pretty prevalent problem related to a medical problem, not to anything other than that.
Why is it so difficult to get coverage?
Well, I think insurance companies view this as a cosmetic problem, and just like they won't pay for your facelift, they won't pay for lipoatrophy treatment. I mean, and of course, the two things are completely different.
Especially in the sense that a treatment for lipoatrophy is really reconstructing the face to what it was, whereas a facelift could be said to be enhancing.
Well, I mean, you can play semantics all you want, but you know, I could probably make an argument that facelifting was rebuilding the face to a younger age.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, mm-hmm. But the truth is that I don't believe that facelifting should be paid by insurance, but I do believe that lipoatrophy should, because this is a disease that is as a result of a disease process and or a series of medications.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So that's sort of the history behind lipoatrophy and my own personal struggles with treating these patients. When Sculptra came along as a possible treatment choice, I was a little skeptical because I had tried other fillers for lipoatrophy patients, and the volume required was always extraordinarily large, and it didn't seem that other fillers really were satisfactory in terms of long-term goals for these patients.
Mm-hmm.
So, and having said that, I have personally not tried silicone, liquid silicone for lipoatrophy. I know that there are some doctors that are using it. I have not tried it.
Silicone is permanent and can be given in large volumes, right? That's why it's...
Well, silicone is permanent and it has to be given in small volumes over multiple sessions, but the total aggregate effect, if properly placed, is to give a sort of a larger net volume. The problem with large volumes of silicone are that silicone can move around a little bit and can create, if too large a volume is placed at once, can lead to massive inflammatory tumor-like reactions to it, which are essentially irreversible. Not being a silicone fan for cosmetic use, I have not become a silicone fan for reconstructive use of lipoatrophy.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
what are you? You are a fan of Sculptra?
I am a fan of Sculptra. I think that Sculptra, you know, Sculptra. Interestingly, the story behind Sculptra is interesting because here it was approved only for lipoatrophy patients. FDA approved only for use in lipoatrophy patients. And yet, in Europe, it was approved initially as a cosmetic filler, and as new fill. And I would have patients who would come to me and ask me if I would do new fill before Sculptra was available.
Mm-hmm.
And my policy is not to do anything that's not FDA approved in terms of injecting non-FDA approved materials into the face. So I never did, and I'm kind of glad I didn't, because Nufil went through a period where the dilution was wrong, and there would be lumps and growths and some infected type of responses of patients in Europe. So I think that by the time it came to the U.S., all those kind of problems had already been worked through in Europe, and we got a product that was essentially ready to use with a time-tested experience behind it that we could rely on. So Sculptra now, which is new film, but just labeled Sculptra as a different name in the U.S., is doing remarkably what it says it will do, and that's rare in terms of, you know, many times a hype of a new material, you know, exceeds its ultimate utility, and yet with Sculptra, it seems to be doing exactly what the company says it will do, which is to provide reliable large volume filling in lipoatrophy patients that can last 2 to 3 years, and then needs a little touch up. But of course, it's only been approved here for about a year and a half, I guess now, and so we don't have that that long term personal experience yet. But so far, it's doing, in terms of its response and its ability to fill large volumes, is doing exactly what it's supposed to do. And I personally, having treated probably about 50 patients so far, have not had patients with lumpiness or any downsides at all, other than perhaps needing more than initially that we had expected they would need for really adequate filling.
Mm-hmm. What's the actual procedure like?
So what we do is patients avoid aspirin and non-steroidal anti-inflammatories like ibuprofen for a week or so before the procedure, because it is a series of injections into the deep parts of the face, and so anything like that can cause more bruising than they need to have. So they avoid those types of things. Other than that, they basically just come in as an office procedure, typically, when I'm treating a full face, as I would with lipoatrophy, we would do some nerve blocks to anesthetize, most of the face that way. And then Sculptra is mixed the night before. The Sculptra has to be mixed the night before use, because it has to hydrate for a number of hours. So it comes as a freeze-dried powder, and we hydrate it the night before.
Hydrating means just adding a lot of water.
Adding water, not a lot of water. We basically add 3 cc's of water, which is less than a teaspoon of water, the night before, and then we come up to a teaspoon, which is a total volume of 5 cc's, with some lidocaine, which is like a local injection that will add to the numbing effect of the injection, so that patients are more comfortable during the injections themselves.
What is the active ingredient?
If you want the technical name, you'll have to hold on a second.
No. Just tell me, like, just in the realm of...
Azelaic acid, which, may not be the full name, but it basically
uh-huh.
is a... essentially an irritant that is injected that the body forms a collagen reaction to. So each little particle of Sculptra is like a sand in an oyster.
Mm.
The body forms a pearl around it. Now, if you have too much sand altogether, then you get a lump. So the trick with Sculptra is to dilute it to the proper dilution, so the individual particles are spread apart enough so that you don't get lumping, but you get a total volume improvement once all that collagen is formed around each little particle that is in excess of the initial volume of material that's placed. Is that clear?
Yes, very clear.
Okay, so the patient comes in, we give them some nerve blocks to anesthetize the face, which is essentially what you get at the dentist before you get dental work done. And not a pleasant experience, but nonetheless not a difficult one to take. No anesthesia is needed. Intravenous or sedation or anything like that is needed. And then we proceed with the injections. The injections are a series of needle sticks throughout the face in the areas that we want to fill with Sculptra. And it's the needle gauge is a fairly small needle gauge. It's relatively painless, although not completely painless, the process. But most patients grade the whole experience on a 0 to 10 scale. If 10 were the most severe pain that they had, they were graded at around a 3 or a 4 in terms of how painful or uncomfortable the experience is.
How long does it take?
The whole process of injecting takes about 20 minutes, about 15 to 20 minutes.
And in terms of your own participation in it, in terms of actually kind of determining where the injections go exactly, how do you do that?
Well, I get the patient involved to tell me where they want to have filling.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best way. And then just based on experience with how the material should be placed in different parts of the face, because there is a little bit of a difference depending where we're trying to fill, on how deep or how superficial the material should be placed to give the best possible result. But and it's very helpful to see pictures of what the patient looked like before they had the lipoatrophy, because that way we could also try to figure out with the patient, well, you know, are they going to actually be able to be like that, or will they have to settle for some filling but less volume in their face than they had before they had the disease?
How long before you see an effect? Do you see one immediately?
Well, immediately you have some swelling, so patients love the way they look immediately. They look great, all swollen up and just like they ought to have looked, they had looked before. But then within the first few days, all the swelling goes away, and so all the effect goes away completely. So here they are. They've either spent a fair amount of money on this, or they've certainly gone through an uncomfortable procedure, and they don't see anything a week later. And then the body starts to form collagen, and it takes about 3 weeks is what most patients start to see some filling and feel some filling. If they've never had Sculptra before, they'll feel it before they see it, in the sense that the tissues will feel fuller and more firm to them as they touch their face.
And it's a gradual process of growing collagen.
Right. And then the process is sort of 80%, 85% there at about 6 to 8 weeks. And so typically I'll see a patient back at about 6 weeks and decide whether they need another cycle of treatment. Very typically, even with mild lipoatrophy patients, patients need at least 2 cycles of treatment, and each cycle involves injecting 1 vial of Sculptra, which is 5 cc's of fluid with the Sculptra mixed into it, per side of the face. So, sort of a minimal sort of treatment would be 2 cycles, so 4 vials altogether, but more typically with more severe lipoatrophy, we'll inject 8 to 10 vials very typically. And that's spread apart. Each injection session is 2 months apart from the one before. So it's a long process of gradual filling, but it is reliable.
And the collagen itself, once it's established, does it remain in place, and is it fairly permanent?
Well, collagen, collagen deposition is a dynamic process. So it's not like collagen is deposited and then just sits there. It's constantly being deposited and resorbed by the body. And the role of Sculptra is to maintain itself there to stimulate ongoing collagen production. And that's fairly, the studies that were done that the FDA reviewed before approving Sculptra actually showed that at 2 years, the patients were better off than they were at 1 year after treatment. So you even have some gradual increase in volume even down the line.
So there's collagen turnover, but as long as the irritants from Sculptra remain in place, the body's constantly producing collagen there.
Right, correct.
What happens if the irritants go away?
Well, when they go away, because they all do. They dissolve to water eventually and go away. So what happens then is that the collagen that was deposited there starts to go away.
Yeah.
And that's when patients will come in. And like I said, we haven't seen that yet because we still are only about a year and a half into the experience of Sculptra here. But judging from what the European guys tell me, at that point, patients will come in and need another touch-up treatment with another couple of vials of Sculptra to maintain their result.
What are some of the responses, what do patients say to you when they come back for that second visit and they've seen?
So typically after one treatment session, most patients say, well, you know, I see a little bit of an improvement. I don't see a whole lot. You know, is this worth it? And I tell them yes, and because it is, and know that it will be for them. And then after the second treatment, they come in and say, "Wow, this is looking really good. Can we do more?" But always the response is always at each session, "Gee, I wish we had a little bit more than I did." So it's not, and it's important to actually realize that putting into each side doesn't translate to 5 cc's of actual volume of collagen response. It's more like 2 cc's. So it's about half or a little bit less than half of what patients will see at the end of their injection session is what they'll end up with after that one, that first treatment. But that builds a nice base, and then the second treatment actually is with the second treatment, patients really see usually a pretty impressive improvement, and then with ongoing treatments after that, again, satisfactory improvement with each session. So it's clear to them that it's worth doing as they proceed in this process. I have not had an unhappy Sculptor patient yet. So,
that's remarkable.
Yeah, so it's really, it gives, as long as, patients know what to expect and don't expect to have, overnight improvement, and that it's going to take many, many months to get them to where they want to be, as long as they know what to expect, the material does what it's supposed to do.
Do you ever use it for other parts of the body or just the face?
Well, I'm a facial plastic surgeon, so I don't do anything outside the face. Mm-hmm. But I do use it off-label for cosmetic use in patients. But, of course, that's off-label and it's not sanctioned by mm-hmm. FDA uses.
I see. Are there any other... My last question is, are there any other particular... products that look really promising to you?
Well, the other the other big product that's being used, I think, fairly commonly in New York anyway, is Radies. Radies is another temporary filler that can give volume, and that is a 1-to-1 volume ratio. It's relatively inexpensive compared to Sculptra, and the effects last for about a year. So And you don't have to wait these many weeks between treatment sessions. You just put in what you want to put in, and then you're done.
It doesn't work in the same way by producing collagen.
No, it works just as a space filler,
yeah.
Right? So it just sits there and takes up space. It's very popular. I think the results are good, judging from colleagues of mine that use it and like it. I think patients like it because it's less expensive than Sculptra, but the longevity is not there. And I'm more of a proponent of doing something that will last mm-hmm. as long as possible so that patients don't have to keep running back and getting more injections.
What's the cost of a Sculptra treatment?
Typically the cost of a treatment is about $1,000 per vial.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite costly. It's a very costly material for us to obtain as doctors. So you can imagine if even a mild case of lipo atrophy requires 4 vials, that's a $2,000 investment, which is not inexpensive for sure, but it's $2,000 over 2 to 3 years. So,
yeah.
That's, I don't think, too bad. Most of my patients spend more on their hair than they do on that. But having said that, Sculptrits, the company, has a program where patients who earn less than a certain income per year can qualify for either reduced cost or free Sculptra. And it's a fabulous program. It's I think, a wonderful thing the company is doing that. And
mm-hmm.
And every doctor who has had Sculptra training knows about this program.
Yes.
And can supply the appropriate forms to their patients.
Great.
And I have a number of patients on that program
mm-hmm.
as well.
I think the income is $40,000 for...
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I'm sorry.
But, okay.